which would be, hey, me. So once again, my name is Chris Elholm. I'm with USDA in New Orleans. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Chanel Forte, Al French, and Jim Rogers, also from New Orleans. Gary Gamble, who was at the Cotton Quality Research Station Clemson, which is no more. So that's how I sort of inherited this project. He's working on chickens in Athens, Georgia for the agency now. Starts with a C, ends with an N, still white. Apparently, that's government common sense. And Devron Thibodeau, who was at New Orleans and at Clemson, is now retired, but we're not letting him get away from us that easily. And finally, Vicky Martin from Cotton Incorporated. So we're talking about the influence of bale storage on cotton quality. You know, everyone's familiar with the last 10, 15 years. You know, we've gone from being a net importer of cotton to a net exporter of cotton. So cotton's going to Asia. It's being stored longer between the ginning and the processing. Cotton that's consumed at a U.S. mill is, you know, well, it's within 12 months. You know, usually it's much sooner than 12 months after ginning that it's consumed. So this isn't so much a domestic problem as it is an overseas problem, but they are one of our biggest customers. What we're looking at is a change in plus B. It causes complaints from the customers. It causes quality control problems for the mill. And just to make it fun, it's an unpredictable problem. I mean, we know that color changes with age, but the problem that we're looking at this study is not really age-related. There's been a lot of research on the effect of storage on cotton color. Most recently, Ed Hughes and Gary and a few other folks worked on a project back in 2011, and this was focused on Pima. And the Pima issue is a different issue because Pima is more yellow and creamy to start with than upland cotton, and it actually becomes whiter, whereas what we're talking about is upland cotton becoming more yellow. This is a continuation of that work. It kind of grew out of that work. Leading up to that was Gary Gamble's work in 2007 and 2008 on color change, which he basically focused on the Maillard reaction. The Maillard reaction is most common in cooking. This is what causes meat to brown or your toast to turn brown. It's the sugars on the surface of food caramelizing due to high heat exposure. His hypothesis was that elevated heat for long periods of time could have the same reaction to the sugars that are naturally present on the exterior cotton fibers. This goes all the way back into the 60s. Cable looked at the change of color during storage, and of course Nickerson back in the 50s with the color change of the standard cottons, which is why they're kept in a freezer in the dark, because we know that happens. In fact, we went to our warehouse a year or two ago, and we had some cottons back from the 2001 crop year that had been measured in 2001, measured again in 2004, measured again in 2005, and then again in 2010 on the same HVI line. And you can see here that the 2001 to 2004, so that 2 to 3 year period, there was a good, roughly a 2 to 3 plus B change, some varieties as high as 4, some varieties as low as just under 2. And that's kind of what we're familiar with, which is over a 2 to 3 year period, it shifts to the yellow, and then that seems to be it. And if you look at 2004 to 2005, it's basically stabilized, bouncing around a little bit. In 2005 to 2010, there seemed to be another shift. Again, we're looking at another 5 years. So this is 10 years old. So over the 9-10 years, we had a fairly significant shift. There's not a whole lot of 9 or 10 year old cotton floating around that we're too concerned about. But it was just to show we were familiar with this happening over extended periods of time. But what we're talking about is cotton that a year old, 18 months at the most, that has shifted. And this is causing a problem for textile mills. I mean, most of y'all are familiar with the idea that, you know, mills are doing 40 to 50 bale laydowns, trying to achieve consistent properties. So that, you know, the yarn from today can be mixed with the yarn from tomorrow, sent out to the customer, and you don't have to worry about any complaints. This is why EFS, MillNet, you know, they take the HVI data, upload it right into their system. Well, when the plus B value isn't right, a lot of mills aren't checking it. When they don't have the time to check it, they don't have the resource to check it. What happens when they do their mix, it's not right. This can cause defects in the yarn package, that it actually looks like bullseye or tree rings in the package. When they go to weave or knit the fabric, you can get it. And most certainly, and usually when my phone rings, is after they dye and finish the fabric and the customer is really ticked off because the shade's not consistent. Like I said, there's some complicated issues. It's a dramatic shift, but it's unpredictable. It doesn't happen often. There's been a few complaints, but it's enough to warrant our attention. It does show up in the yarn packages, but what's really just to make this even more fun is once you bleach the yarn or the fabric, it's all white, all the same shade, no issues. But when they apply a dye to it, those shade differences pop back. So if you're selling bleached fabric, you really have no idea what you're buying. But after you dye and finish it, you'll know you have a problem. So there's an immediate solution. Jim Rogers, and he talked about this a little bit yesterday, developed a handheld instrument, handheld spectrometer. There's a picture of it right there. The mills can take that, go right up to a bale, click, get a reading, and just go bale to bale, drop it into its cradle, and the new plus B values can replace the plus B values that came with the bales in the whatever your mill management software is, allow you to select the right bales. Great, problem solved. Well, solve the symptom, but what if you don't have one of these? How do you know you need one of these? Doesn't really, you know, solve the whole problem. So this study was launched. So last year we went and we procured 12 bales from one module. And what we did is we actually went out to Abingen in Abingen, Mississippi, and we found a variety that was very, very white, which is Delta Pine 0912. It's a real popular variety this year and last year. And we actually got two modules of it. We put them back to back in the mill, ran the first module right or through the gin, ran the first module through, and on the second module started collecting samples. Those 12 bales in a row were taken, and we took samples for testing, and they were sent to three different storage conditions. We've got four bales sitting in a staple cotton warehouse in Indianola. We've got four bales sitting in a shipping container in the parking lot at Indianola, and we've got four bales sitting in a cold storage facility in Greenville, Mississippi, with the idea being that's our control. You know, we know if we keep them in the dark, keep them frozen, nothing should change. The original plan was actually a 12-month storage time, but in the middle of all this, the Clemson lab was closed. We relocated the Clemson textile mill to New Orleans, and we started to wonder, crap, what if we're not ready in time, since that'd be this past October. And so we kicked it out to 18 months, and we may actually cut that a little short. 18 months was not just completely pulled out of thin air. It's actually the average time from ginning to consumption in the mills overseas. At the time of ginning, the samples were sent off to AMS for standard classing. Nice tight range, 4.849 micronair. Good length, good strength, good color. Like I said, this variety was picked because it's a very white variety. Color grade of 31. The plus Bs range from 8.1 to 8.5. No module averaging. Sorry, Jimmy. Guess we could fake it, though. So what are we going to do with these bales? Well, we're going to do color analysis, obviously. We're going to do color analysis throughout when we pull these bales out of storage. We're going to check the color again. As we process them into yarn and fabric and even dyed and woven fabric, we're going to check the color. We're going to do chemical analyses. Most of my colleagues listed as co-authors are chemists. I'm not a chemist, but they're going to be looking at the sugar, the wax, the pectin, the various properties on the surface of the fiber and characteristics of the fiber that we don't test with APHIS and HVI, although those will also be tested, to see what is changing. Additionally, frictional properties. If we are caramelizing those sugars, if we are changing the sugars on the surface, then this could be more than just an appearance issue. This could actually be a processing issue. This could, you know, change the drafting forces, which could result in uniformity issues. And those uniformity issues can also result in appearance issues in finished fabric. So we're going to examine the frictional properties. And like I said, we're going to take all 12 bales here, all the way through textile processing into woven and knit fabrics, all the way to dyed and finished, and we test it all along the way. We have a full state-of-the-art textile mill in New Orleans to do this. We've got a full testing lab to do this. So, yes, the bales are being stored, but right before Christmas, we were discussing, what if the bales don't change? Like I said, it's unpredictable. So we ran up to Indianola one day and took Jim's little handheld instrument and went to the cold storage and checked it. And if you look, yes, these values are a little different than the values from classing, even for the cold storage, but that's because we're using the handheld instrument here, not the HVI. This was real quick and dirty just to make sure that we're on the right path here. But you can see here in the cold storage, we had a plus B of 7.5, the warehouse, 7.6. I'm willing to call that the same. you know, it came out to a 31 color grade. The shipping container, though, 9.6. You know, that it's not enough that when you're just standing there looking at that bale, it doesn't look different. It's not anything. But if we make this in the yarn and put it side by side with the 7.5 and the 7.6 and the 9.6, that 9.6 is going to jump out at you. And it is enough that that shift is down to a 32. And again, we'll be doing HVI on this shortly once we pull these samples out. So what are the desired outcomes of this? Well, we're trying to identify, is there a storage condition effect? You know, when bales are in a shipping containers get hot. In the bottom of a shipping hold going to Asia, they get hot. Sitting in a port waiting to get to Asia, they get hot. When they get to Asia, they're still sitting in a shipping container getting hot. Do we have to deal with that? And again, as I said, besides the storage condition, what's the surface chemistry? What is actually happening here? Is there a bigger problem? Is there something the breeders can do? Is there something we can do to either predict this, control this, reset it? We don't know. And like I said, the big thing to me, besides color, is there something else being compromised? Because when you start changing the surface properties, you're changing how it's going to actually process through a mill. So it's underway. Hopefully next year we'll have some results. Like I said, in the next couple of months we'll be pulling these bales out of storage and turning and burning and getting them tested and converted as fast as possible. One of the problems with the previous studies was actually they either didn't have a change or they took so long in processing and testing, it became, you know, invalid. If you take 2 years to do the testing, once we pull them out of storage, the clock's ticking. So I'd like to thank Buddy Cochran and Avin Jin for the assistance in procuring the bales. Buddy grew it as well as ginned it. Mid-Delta Cold Storage for providing cold storage space, and Staple Cotton for letting us stick some bales in a warehouse that they're not getting paid for, and also for letting us stick a shipping container in the middle of their parking lot for the better part of a year and a half. And, of course, Cotton Incorporated for the money. So, any questions? And that's Fred.
Your conclusion is that the storage, the shipping containers could cause a difference in color.
It's really early to have any conclusions, but elevated heat for extended periods of time, whatever the source is. I mean, you know, there are some warehouses that are a lot hotter than other warehouses. And so, you know, while, yeah, you know, we're using the shipping container to actually, you know, create that high heat situation, you could potentially have this problem in a warehouse. I have heard, you know, most of this came out of one major problem, I guess, was it a year ago, Jimmy? 2 years ago? But I've heard this year there was another smaller but similar issue. So yeah, maybe a shipping container, but more it's storage condition. To be politically correct, which is not my usual mode.
But it would be good to know if you had a problem, how long they stayed in a container.
Yes. And we actually have data loggers that we put in with these as well to try to monitor just how hot does the shipping container get. The first project that Gary and Ed Hughes did, they stored the bales in the warehouse in South Carolina. South Carolina can get hot, but doesn't always get really hot. And that was what they found out, is their data loggers for their warehouse never got that hot. Come to my warehouse in New Orleans, and, on a nice summer day, it's as hot as the shipping container I have sitting next to my warehouse.
So the warehouseman, it might be good to monitor.
It would probably be advisable to monitor if they're going to be in there for, you know,
several months.
So, you know, I know, like, Staple Cotton Indianola happens to have one warehouse they know is hotter than their others. They don't really store anything in there. That's where they kind of consolidate their shipments. So they're in there for short periods of time. You know, the workers hate that warehouse because it's just significantly hotter. Insulation would probably help, fans, you know. But that's what we're trying to figure out, is there a way to control this? You know, because it's not it doesn't happen often. I mean, we've been shipping cotton to Asia for a good long while, and mills have stored cotton for long periods of time and not seen a problem. So is it a variety effect? Is it it could be a multiple thing. Jimmy?
You know, for making standards, we do store a lot of cotton in an air-conditioned warehouse. Mm-hmm. And for years, what we've seen is that over the summer months, that's the worst time to split cotton from warehouse. That's where the plus B changes. Winter, spring, fall, you really don't see that much change. But it's those 3 or 4 months during the summer that it takes off. And it happens. I said it's unpredictable, but it seems to be in your higher grade bales, your straight midlands, your midlands.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the wider you are, the more susceptible you are. That's, you know, this was a crapshoot, quite honestly. We were like, what if the bale doesn't change? And we're like, well, we picked one of the whitest varieties we could on the off chance. I mean, I can't go, you know, grab a dozen modules and, you know, this balloons out of control real quick. Michael?
Is the color change uniform?
That's one of the things we actually have to look at. We really don't know. I mean, you know, the classing result is the classing result. You know, it's off of that.
Answer that just from the standard bale. No, it's not uniform. And the longer period you go, you'll see more as you open up the bale. It's not on the surface, it's throughout. But there will be like hot spots in there that will color up more than other spots.
Yeah. Whereas the Pima issue tends to be more actually on the exterior of the bale. But that's also UV, and that's why, you know, UV resistant bale bagging resolves that issue a lot. Yes, sir.
We have been contacting open air storage for cotton over a period of 1 to 2 years. And we found out that the most change in color occurs with the variation of heat and humidity together.
Mm-hmm.
If you store cotton in a fairly dry environment like in Mexico or something like that, the color change is less than if you are, let's say, Mississippi or where we are in Brazil. And we have humidity, relative humidity up to 95-98%, and then you have color change in the plus B values.
Now, well, our data loggers in all four conditions are monitoring both temperature and humidity. Now, that being said, they got a little crushed. You wouldn't think sitting in a shipping container. I'm not sure what happened, so I'm actually in the middle of trying to recover that data. However, Rick Beiler had some data loggers and staple cotton as well, so I need to go raid his stash of data if we don't have ours.
I think that that's true about the humidity.
Mm-hmm.
And also just the moisture of the bale coming out of the gin.
Yeah.
If you have higher bale moisture coming out of the gin, you're going to see.
Absolutely.
That was going to be a question. Did y'all monitor the after ginning bale moisture?
Yes and no. Gary has the samples. Whether he ever actually checked them, it's hard to say since they were in the middle of the move. He thinks he might have, but he's looking for it. Relocating his office as well as the whole lab, things got caught in the shuffle. But so I do know they were under 7.5%. They were fairly dry. It was great ginning weather, great condition. It was a dry module. You know, everything was as ideal as we could. It wasn't even a high, you know, we certainly weren't ginning at 40 bales an hour. I mean, we were, you know, like 20, 25 bales. Nice, easy pace. So, well, thank you all.